What is happening? Welcome to another episode of The Craft. My name is Nick Pollock, and today, well, I wanted to compare some starting pitchers, so who better to bring in, but the man with the cap himself, that is Eno Saris of The Athletic. Eno, good to see you, man.
Bad hair day.
Never for you. What do you mean a bad hair day?
Just couldn't get it to go in the right directions today.
All right, come on, just show us once what it is. This is what you get when you watch it on YouTube, by the way. YouTube.com/PitchWest or YouTube.com/TheCraftPodcast.
Plus, I got to get used to this. Yeah. Guess what? I just got made head coach of my youngest Little League squad.
Is that right?
Yes.
Oh, man. Yes. Good
gonna
luck.
I'm going to be out there spreading,
it is.
I'll be spreading disinformation. You,
I coached travel ball for a moment, right? And my gosh, I hated it. obviously I enjoyed it. I loved working with the kids and how, like, you know, their skills and in game and everything like that. But man, those games are so long and it is not good baseball.
I'm sorry. Walks.
It is not good baseball, and it's just tough, and it takes a certain kind of patience of a parent that I was not to do. But no, they're great. Have a wonderful time with it. If you need any sort of little pointers about certain ways to communicate early skills, I'm here for it. I'm excited for you, you know?
Yeah. Wish me luck. That's all I need, I think. I've got mostly, I want my whole thing will be like, we will scrimmage more than other teams, I think.
Oh, okay.
Like, I just want them to play.
Yeah. That's the number one rule, is you have to make sure every practice they have fun.
Yeah, exactly.
But what we're going to do today is, I thought it would be change the format a little bit. I wanted to make it direct about decisions that managers might be having right now who are on the wire. And I figured it'd be good for us to talk about the two of them. So this is a who would you rather episode of starting pitcher matchups for the next week or two. And I'm going to start it off with two lefties. I've been talking about this whole soft tossing lefty thing with a changeup. I'm calling it a Boyer. That is Jamie Moyer and Matthew Boyd.
Not Blaine Boyer.
Just Boyer. Hey, Boyer, how you doing? You know, that kind of thing. And one of them is Ian Seymour, who now is going against Cleveland in Tampa Bay. And then there's Peyton Tolley, who goes into Arizona. And there are pros and cons for both. One, Tolley has, of course, in a much better four-seamer, but he was at a somewhat limited pitch count in that first one, and he might not have the full leash. While Ian Seymour going against a Cleveland team, not very good against lefties, and it is in Tampa Bay, though, and Seymour doesn't have quite the same ceiling that Tolley does. If you had to just start one of these guys, 12-team standard league, which one are you going to choose, Eno?
I'm going with the mustache. You called him a soft tosser, but he sits 96. So
he's not. No. Ian Seymour was the boy.
Ian Seymour is the Boyer. Yeah. Yes. Peyton Tolley. Yeah. There's. I'm going with him. I like the stuff. I think he's a big old boy that can handle the innings. You're right, though. This is going. He's heading towards 100 innings. I think he has 91 so far across all leagues. Last year, though, with Texas Christian, he did have 81, and in 2023 he had 85. So this is someone who is racked up. Those are decent innings totals for college. So I think they're going to be comfortable going to 125, maybe even 130 with him.
Sure.
And that's enough to pitch the rest of the way. They need him. You know, Garrett Crochet's last start wasn't great. And Boston's one of those teams that kind of needs to play their way in. I mean, I think they're in now, but it's not like it's not guaranteed. They have to play their way in. So
absolutely.
I think Tolley's going to go as far as they think they need. It's not that like that bullpen's really deep either, right? It's good at the back end, but it's not. It has a little bit of a soft underbelly. So I'm cool with that. I think it's the Rays that might be more comfortable, more careful with their pitchers, given that they're falling out of the race. And they want to develop some innings totals for next year. But Seymour also is in that class of the Boyers, the Aaron, the Cincinnati Red, the Andrew Abbotts of the world.
Yes.
Where I just watch and I'm like, I don't quite get it. I don't even think the changeup looks that good, but he does command it well. So right. I don't usually bet on this type. Now, when you look at the schedule, I think you could argue that maybe Seymour's schedule is a little bit better because Peyton Tolley has an at Sacramento and an at Toronto that is probably worse than anything Seymour is going to see.
Seymour is going to pretty much has two good starts ahead of him. Cleveland home, then at the White Sox, but then you don't really want to face Toronto in Tampa Bay, then hosting Boston, and then at Toronto, right?
It's so a really, really bad
for the next
finish.
Week or two, Ian Seymour is on the radar.
Yeah, I mean, if you wanted to try and thread the needle, you could do Seymour than Tolley, but the problem is Tolley, I think, is going to shove, and then he won't be on any wires, and he's not really on any wires yet, so right now. So if you're having a decision about who to keep on your roster, it's Tolley for me.
Yeah, I think I'd agree with that one just because the four-seamer is just that good. I mean, we'll mention, though, that Peyton Tolley's pitch counts have been low. It's not necessarily about the innings itself. It's just about the total pitch counts. In the minors, they were keeping him under 80. He just pitched 84, which is the most that he's had all year, and they might keep it down around there as they have in the minors throughout the season.
Not a good quality start guy, but I've seen Drew Rasmussen do this before. If you were good enough, you can get a win with 85 pitches.
All right. So on that note, I think this is going to be a very interesting one and one that a lot of guys are debating right now. Jacob Mizorowski, who has an amazing schedule at Pittsburgh, St. Louis, at St. Louis, or Dylan Cease, who has just driven us up the wall. But he has at Coors and then Rocky Road next. What are you doing here?
I don't think this is a very useful discussion.
I think it is because I've actually.
Do you think you would actually drop Dylan Cease?
People have 100% dropped Dylan Cease, yes. And people are debating if Jacob Mizorowski is worthwhile considering he just went four innings. Even though it was 93 pitches before, these are questions that I've actually been getting.
I did have them really close to each other. I just, for me, both of them are not droppable. So that's why, that's why I reacted the way I did. If I had to choose between one, I had to drop one. I guess it's Cease.
That you're holding.
The at Colorado is just, that's a non-starter.
Oh, interesting. Well, I mean, the way I see that though, is that Dylan Cease, look, when you talk about the Rockies as an offense, I mean, they're mostly right-handers and they are absurdly susceptible, as most people are, but even them more so to any sort of breaking ball down away.
And the gyro slider is actually the pitch that is least affected by Coors.
Oh, that's interesting.
It doesn't actually need any, it doesn't need the air to change its movement.
If you're seeing on YouTube, Cashew has not arrived as she does. She'll be here for about 20 seconds and then go away. I think you got to start Dylan Cease, just that's how it is. But I would be dropping him first because Jacob Mizorowski threw 93 pitches in the game before his last one, even though it was four innings. And those matchups, he's going to cruise through them. You know, the Brewers are going to look at more at pitches here and they'll say, great, five innings of 70 pitches for each of these. I think it's a no-brainer for those who have been wondering about this one.
The one weird thing is that on the 24th of September, he goes into San Diego, and that's a potential postseason opponent.
Mm.
I wouldn't be surprised if he does not make that start.
Yeah, that does not surprise me there. Also, I would think that they would be locked around then or know what they're going to do.
Exactly. Might just lock, Mizorowski, put in a rookie.
Yeah, we're going to even just slow you down even more. And then we're going to let you loose in the playoffs. I can absolutely see that one. I'm going to shift gears a little bit here to some of the really tough ones. Because I asked this to you last week. And you're like, come on, Nick, there's no way. Of course, Cashew decides to leave now. And Robbie Ray did not fare well against the Orioles and now goes into Coors. Mm-hmm. And I'm looking at him versus, say, Ryan Pepiot, who is more of a 50-50 kind of guy. He gets Seattle and home, which I don't like, but then goes at Chicago White Sox, then at the Cubs, and then hosts the Red Sox and at Baltimore. And I see this. Actually, I'm so sorry. We have the Jays twice as opposed to the Cubs and the Orioles for Ryan Pepiot. I see this and I go, all right, I feel like I would be going Pepiot, as he's actually going to not get that Mariners. So I was looking at Adrian Hauser. He's going to get the Cleveland Guardians in.
Yeah, I like the next two starts for Pepiot are great. Cleveland and at White right. Sox.
So a lot of people are going for Ryan Pepiot, though.
Pepiot like, might be a dropper on the 15th of September.
The pipette, as we went over last
week. Yeah, because that he ends with Toronto, Boston, Toronto. Like, I don't really want any part of that.
And do you think that Robbie Ray, this was just a little bit of a blip, he was up to
Oh, that's so bad. I've got Pepiot in my 12-team dynasty. I can't drop him. I just have to...
But that's because it's a dynasty. You know, not everyone's in a dynasty. Yeah,
I know. What was it? What was the Pepiot versus who?
Robbie Ray, who just went into... Right. Yeah, who just faced the Orioles, did not fare well. It's three straight really bad ones for him, if not longer. Goes into Coors, and it's Arizona twice, one home and one away.
Yeah, you know, what is Arizona right now? What is Arizona? Because they traded away their guys. Offense. Well, because, you know, normally I would say, you know, Arizona is a place that I would avoid.
Right.
But, you know, they traded away two key guys. So over the last 30 days, which is kind of since the trade deadline, Arizona is a 108 WRC team still with a 255, 316, 446 slug. So they're not someone you target. They may not be someone you avoid. In the past, they were just like always leading the league in runs for some reason. You're just like, I don't understand it with that offense. Yeah. But, you know, so with Robbie Ray, I think the at Dodgers on the 20th is no good. But otherwise, his schedule is better, especially on the back end. So if you are a team, like especially if, like if you're in a buy right now, I would take Ray. But if you just need to win every game from here on out, I would take Pepiot. Because the next two starts. We'll get
the Dodgers, keep in mind, on the 20th of September. And I don't even know, like the last week of the season, it's really difficult to tell you who's going to start. Because a lot of
like
guys
he's supposed to get Colorado on the 26th, or the Giants might be out of it, and you know they will just
and Ray say, just says, you know what, I've got to rest, I got to
check. Yeah.
Right, you're going to see that a lot that final week, so be very careful about it.
I would wait towards the especially because of how playoffs are structured. If you're talking about we're talking to a lot of people playing head to head, and if they're playing head to head, they don't really care like about the third and fourth starts.
That's a really good point, right? Because that's the finals sometimes end before the last week.
Yeah,
so true. Fantastic point there. I'm going to throw something at you here. Okay, I don't know if you watch these two Boyers or not. They both debuted the last 3 days. Okay, now the next start for one of them, you don't want to do it's at Chicago, but the one after for Andrew Alvarez is Pittsburgh, hosted in the Nationals, and then last night. I feel like the world of baseball is just seeing how far the walls are and testing the waters with this, because we saw a 90 mile per hour four seam with a 77, 78 mile per hour sloth ball, as I call it, and a 81 mile per hour gyro slider from Mitch Ferris on the Angels get a win. And I guess I'm going to phrase it like this. I'm not saying like the rest of the way, which one do you want? Each of them have maybe one start you might want to circle. Like you have at Kansas City and in LA, not in Sacramento against the Athletics. And then at Seattle for Mitch Ferris, the next three. And then for Andrew Alvarez, you get at Chicago, but then it's hosting the Pirates and then Atlanta. If you could take one start out of all of those between Alvarez and Ferris, who is it?
I'm gonna take Andrew Alvarez against Pittsburgh.
And why is that?
Pittsburgh.
Yeah, I mean, okay, that's incredibly fair.
I didn't actually see Alvarez yet. I try to make a point to see all the debuts. I did see some of Ferris. And I didn't feel like I needed to see a lot more. I don't know.
I think it was the fastest I've ever come up with. Yeah. Oh my gosh. I think it's the fastest I've ever come up with my SP roundup pun. I've typed in Mitch Ferris and I sent it to Justin Paradis, who does a 6 out of 7 days a week. And I said, Mitch Ferris. And I said, Ferris Fair. Done. Like, this is so easy. And the thing is about Ferris, it's like, it is a very good changeup and he keeps it down to right-handers. Like, he commanded down. You obviously have to have good command if you throw 90 miles per hour. There's no way you are in this situation. You didn't just like have, you know, try to get your parking validated and wind up on the mound. Like, you worked a long time to get here. And if you're willing to do it with a 90 mile per hour fastball, you better have good command with it.
You're taking the Athletics home?
No, I'm taking Alvarez too. I'm just trying to showcase the point that Ferris could make it work. Maybe at Seattle, maybe at the tee, it could work. We've seen in the past that changeups, I remember the past 3 years or so, changeups work well against the Mariners.
I was having an argument with a beat writer and two scouts in spring about an Angels pitcher, Jack Kochanowicz.
Oh my gosh. The Jack of one trade and now is no trade.
And that's what I said. I said, there's not enough going on here. You know, he might have one thing that he can do. Like, major league starting pitchers need to have two or three things they can do. Plus, the strikeout rate is just not tenable. I think you need to have at least like a 18-19% strikeout rate. And Kochanowicz was sitting around 14 and 15. It's just not. Yeah. I think that's too many balls in play. Now, Ferris has had slightly higher strikeout rates than that. So maybe.
I mean, the changeup will do that, right? I mean, it's, think of it like a slider from a righty to a righty. That's what those changeups act, you know?
I'm just worried that if they can spot anything, if they can do something like, hey, I'm just not going to swing anything down because you just throw your changeup down, you know, then they get to like swing at 90 mile an hour fastballs.
And then with Alvarez, what's up with him is he has two breaking balls that have more drop than you'd expect on them. Even the four seamer has like a lot more drop than it should. We actually have, you know, I finally got it from Kyle to, I think I sent it to you also, maybe not, add expected vert based on arm angle inside of my daily one sheet. And so I asked you for a table that was kind of like a reference point.
How did you do it? Just group guys by arm angle and see what the average.
I guess he had it based on miles per hour and extension too, because that's part of it, right? Like how hard you're throwing is going to change all these things too. I have a table to share with the staff.
The best thing that I had was off of Alex Chamberlain's picture leaderboard.
I reached out to someone who knows these things a lot, and he sent me the repository for an app that he made. And then from there we're able to derive a lot of it, which is pretty great.
So you might know who's that?
Someone you might have worked with before. So for me, that with Alvarez is kind of interesting. That okay, cool, he's missing underneath with the four seamer. And all of these other breaking balls are generally just like, wait, hold on a second. You get a lot more drop on the slider and curve than we normally see. So he's actually really good at going underneath the nitro zone of right-handers with those breaking pitches a lot. Kind of like Joey Wentz is right now with his slider and curveball. Which, by the way, Savant, thank you so much for changing the cutter to a slider classification. That is correct. So I'm with you that it is under Alvarez. And would you be going for that in a 12-teamer? Do you feel like Alvarez is worthwhile there? Because he certainly has enough of a leash, I think, by then. It could definitely work out in PNC Park.
I'm really tempted to say neither, really.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, that seems right. But this has worked time and time again. And it's just kind of, when do we accept it, right?
I'm looking at the bottom of the vert dead zone delta. So these are guys who have way more sink on their pitches than their arm slot suggests they should. And it's JT Ginn's four seamer at the top, which he's thrown three of. So really, it's Andre Pallante's four seamers. So
oh yeah, that makes sense.
Sinkers. It's the guys who throw sinkers. They're four seamers. Yeah.
Yeah.
But JT Ginn's sinker actually leads all sinkers.
I'm not surprised.
In drop over expected, given their arm slot. That's kind of fun.
Yeah, he's got a legitimate sinker, and he's actually been commanding super well around the zone. Four pitches, cutter, slider, changeup as well.
And I have to think that, like, this is good for sinkers. It may not be good for four seamers because, like, if Andre Pallante's four seamer has 7 inches more drop than the expected, then I think hitters can just be like, that's his other sinker. You know what I mean?
Yeah, right. Like, that just looks different already because it's such a massive difference.
In their head, they'll just be like, that's a sinker. So, and then, like, Calvin Fauché's cutter has 6 inches more drop than you'd expect.
What,
but I think in your head, you can just step to the plate and be like, it's a slider.
Yeah, right. Yeah, I mean,
this is something that came up.
Going to mess things up a little bit with this, right? Because, you know, the gray areas between all of them, it's not like we're talking about like Nick Pivetta's four seamer difference. You know, it's, there are a lot of these fastballs. Like Kyle Bradish has negative X movement on his four seamer. I'm like, that's not a four seamer.
Because it's basically a cutter. Yeah, exactly. Like, and this came up with somebody was telling me that they were preparing for Joey Lucchese in the minor leagues one time. And they were talking to some minor leaguers and they were like, they're like, oh my God, like the Cherv, man, the Cherv's so crazy, the Cherv. And he's like, what, why do you think the Cherv's so crazy? And the hitters were like, oh, I don't know, man. Cause it's like he calls it a changeup, but it kind of moves like a curve. And it's he said, just call it a curve. And they all went and banged out like 20 hits or something, I guess. It's like, just call it a curve.
Yeah.
I just think it's a curve.
Don't treat it like that thing. Oh my gosh. That's amazing.
So at the bottom of that list, you traditionally find sinker guys. I haven't found Alvarez yet, but you know, the best sinkers on this list, you know, by more sink than expected. Max Fried, Jose Soriano, Clay Holmes, Logan Webb, JT Ginn, Andrew Salfrank. So that's where the sinker ball.
I think next year you'll see Sawyer Gibson Long on there too. I don't know if it's qualified enough to get it right now for you. Because I mean, he used to be like a 2-inch vert guy. Now it's like 5 or so. But still, that's still very good. We're going to talk about a few more. We're going to go back to Boston for a second. We have also some more that are really right on the fringe of your 12 teamers, and we'll talk about all of them after this break. All right, we are back, and we're going to go to New York first because I can't decide who I would want more. Would you rather, Eno, go with Will Warren or Luis Gil? Now, Will Warren gets at Houston tonight, I believe it is, and then we'll get Detroit and at Boston, while Luis Gil gets the Jays at Boston and at Minnesota. How are you feeling about both of these guys?
It's kind of wild that they have such different schedules.
Yeah.
I'm going with Will Warren.
And why is that?
The Astros are a slightly righty team. They do have Yordan Alvarez, who's a big, scary lefty, but Will Warren can just walk him. And then at Detroit, I like. I don't like at Boston, but at Baltimore, I like, and Chicago White Sox. So I actually like 4 of Will Warren's final 5 starts. Mm. Whereas if I play that game with Luis Gil, I really don't like the next 2 starts at Minnesota. And at Chicago's all right, but it's loaded in the wrong direction. Like Luis Gil for the next 2 starts is a tough play, I think.
So here's the to play devil's advocate a little bit here.
On Will talent, Warren, though, I take Gil.
Well, that's the thing, is Will Warren feels like he's going in the opposite direction, right? Mm. If you want to suggest fatigue, it makes a lot of sense considering this is his first full season. It's pretty much pitched throughout. And we have not seen the Will Warren that we want to see, which is four-seamer and sinker, not as the primary pitches, but actually just helping get at-bats to the slider, or really the sweeper, and the changeup. And the changeup has fallen on the wayside, and the sweeper is there. It's not as dominant as we've seen in the past. And the four-seamer sinker are pretty much trying to do it all, and we've seen many games where they just aren't that good. And there's a feeling that I have of just Will Warren has maybe even a lower floor than Luis Gil at this moment, and it could get worse. While Luis Gil is on the other side of it, he's, you know, the whole idea is that over time, coming back from Tommy John, you will get that command back, you'll get that feel back, you'll be able to throw more changeups and sliders for strikes in the same at bat, right? So yes, I'm with you that in the short term, that Toronto start looks pretty scary for Luis Gil, and at Boston is not fun for either Will Warren or Luis Gil. But I would contest that at Minnesota, Chicago White Sox, and potentially Baltimore at the end is better than the other four combined for Will Warren.
To your point, Will Warren is 7 innings past his previous career high in innings. I'm looking at the game log. I don't see a collapse so much as just these every fourth game or so is just awful.
Like, it's just like, all right, well, I mean, that's what we call the reverse werewolf, right? Instead of showing up once.
Who's got a name for these things?
Why I do, because here's the thing, you know, when you write about him every He's single normal. Night,
yeah,
you're going to eventually come up with the same things.
What is
and you got to have a way of just going to that, right? The thing about Will Warren, though, is that, yeah,
it's what is like a reverse werewolf?
What's that? Well, werewolf is it shows up once a month. So like Dean Kramer is, I call him Dean Werewolf.
A good start once a month. So he's a reverse werewolf.
He's a reverse one, right?
So let me just play. We play this game sometimes of like, could you have avoided the disaster, right?
Oh, yeah, that's fun.
At LA Dodgers, 1.1 innings and 7
that
runs.
I remember that one. That was
rough. You could have avoided that. Boston, 5 innings, 4 earned runs. You could have avoided that.
I mean, that was in New York, away from Fenway.
But still, it's a bad... If you just do the opponent. At Toronto, 4 innings, 8 earned runs. You could have avoided that.
Mm-hmm.
At Atlanta, 3 2/3, 5 earned runs. I mean, you could have avoided that if you were pretty conservative, which means that you're going to be conservative with his starts going forward, that you basically only start him at Detroit. That's the only way you avoid that Atlanta start. And then Boston again, 4 innings, 5 earned runs. So you could have avoided a lot of the Warren disasters, but you'd had to be pretty conservative. And that means you're probably not starting him in Houston. So
what if
that
I told
takes
you?
Away some of my argument.
What if I told you that since July 2nd, this is his last 11 games, okay? Will Warren has a 4.20 ERA, 1.53 WHIP, and an 18% strikeout rate. And you know what? I'm even going to do him a solid and not even include that bad game against Toronto.
Ooh, right? And what day did you pick?
The 2nd of July. So I'm going to say actually now starting on the 8th, which is with the 8 earned run game behind him, okay? So now it's starting with a goose egg in 5.2 innings against Seattle. Will Warren had a 3.14 ERA with a 1.37 WHIP and an 18.5% K rate since then. And he's only had 2 games in that time above 5 strikeouts and 4 of them of 3 or fewer. His last 3 games, Will Warren, 3 strikeouts each.
His stuff is down too.
Right. This is what I'm getting at of... Will Warren is not pitching like the Will Warren of the first half at the moment. So even though it is a better schedule, there's a part of me that feels that Luis Gil is in a better situation to exercise his ceiling.
I mean, he went from a 101 stuff plus to 94 stuff plus.
Oh boy.
It's interesting. And then the location plus is not his friend. Although he has games where the games where he's good, he locates, you know, but right. That means that he's now in that class of pitcher whose stuff makes him major league capable, but needs kind of outstanding command to have good games.
Yeah. I do wonder if the stuff plus decline is because he also threw fewer sweepers and threw fewer secondaries, which I imagine would link up well, because I wouldn't think the four-seamer and the sinker are the stuff.
The four-seamer and sinker are still down too. He went from 104 on the sinker to 96, went from 95 to 85 on the four-seam.
Gosh. That's
something. So there's something going on here. I think that I would link it also to the number, the innings thing. So I guess the move is heel on the bench for two games.
Yeah.
I mean,
you don't want either right now is what I'm trying to get at. And then I would have more optimism, I think, for heel.
Yeah.
That is where I'm leaning, but I can understand if Warren looks good enough against Houston that you'd start him against the Tigers as well. I'm going to move to another would you rather. And I'm curious if you have one for me, if you just came up with them like, oh man, this is what I'm debating. I'm curious to hear it by all means. But I came up to this and said, look, you know, I got it. Say these are fun ones.
Mm-hmm.
This is a very interesting one. Aaron Nola or Yu Darvish?
Oh, well, yeah, there you go. I like the name value, but also on and off rosters this year.
So Aaron Nola, the rest of the season, not favorable. Today is going against the Brewers.
Royals in red, though. I don't know. I'll take that Royal start. And I think Arizona middle of the pack, I can take that. And the Mets are hitting it right now.
They're just not pitching.
Yeah. Yeah, if it was at Mets, I would be like, at least it's at City, but it's home against the Mets. I like his end of season schedule. I will take Aaron Nola's last three games, Royals, D-backs, Twins. I'm taking that. I'd like that, actually.
But here's the thing.
But what's Darvish, San Diego?
Yu Darvish, you just went four innings.
Starts well. If I could thread that needle where I get Yu Darvish's next two starts and then Aaron Nola's last three starts, then I'm winning.
Right, because it's the Reds carpet where everybody goes for a stroll, and then it's Rocky Road for Yu Darvish. So that I feel like you got to go with that. And if you only have one right now, and you say, cool, I got to drop one for the other. I mean, I'm personally in favor of Darvish because bird in the hand, two in the bush kind of thing. I make it like four, honestly, with how much the weight is right now and how the uncertainty is at the end of the season. So I know that sounds absolutely bonkers because it's Aaron Nola and Yu Darvish has not made it work, but those matchups are just too good for Darvish right now.
I've got a young player grouping for you. It's a 12 teamer that I'm looking at. It's actually one I'm looking at. Ryan Burkert versus Emmett Sheehan.
Okay, so it's actually funny you say that because Josh Oakes just said inside of our comments here, as we're doing this, of course, live, everyone, that Ohtani has been scratched from pitching, Sheehan getting the start. I don't know if that means today. I'm going to assume that means today.
Okay, Sheehan had been taken out of the rotation and was somehow on your schedule for the 7th. But hey, he gets Pittsburgh, but that's really hard for people to be, you know, to use as an action item. However, if he just gets Ohtani's schedule after this, he gets Colorado next.
Oof.
Philly bad at Arizona.
Yeah.
We don't know if he just gets Ohtani's schedule, though. So it's really almost, do you take Sheehan hoping he gets a good schedule? The Dodgers' schedule in general is decent because they see a lot of the Giants. And the Sheehan schedule that he had before was supposedly Giants and Mariners and Orioles. So as a fallback plan, that's not too bad. Whereas Burkert does get the Angels and at home and Cleveland on the road. I like that part. But then he ends with Philly, Toronto, and the Angels on the road.
So. I'm going to go with Emmett Sheehan for a couple of reasons. One, I believe a little bit more in the win potential for Emmett Sheehan. I think also just talk about stuff and ability. I think Emmett Sheehan has a more reliable skill set of that four seamer upstairs. Beautiful. That works well. You have a slider that works. You have a developing changeup. And with Burkert, I want to like the four seamer more. It just doesn't come in hard enough for me. And it is focus on the sweeper more so now that he's in Kansas City, which is great. He has that slider as well.
Four seam sweeper combo is a little bit weird. I mean, it could be good weird.
Right. Pivetta is the only one I can really think of like that, but he doesn't have the same extreme arm angle like Pivetta, which should help. So I do like the Angels for Burgert because it is right-handers and it should play into him more. However, at Cleveland does worry me a little bit if Burgert does have the right attack for lefties, which can be one of those things that is in development for a little bit. So I'm not as confident there. While Emmett Sheehan, I feel like, higher win chance. They, as the Dodgers, should be utilizing Emmett Sheehan a ton to preserve all their starters for October as well. He's fresh off of 10 Ks against Reds carpet. I understand it's the Reds. I know. But this just looks too good on paper to turn down. I might even, if Sheehan's still going, I'd be even tempted against the Phillies. I think he's just that good of a talent. But yeah, that's where I'm leaning. Are you with me there?
Yeah. The one thing I don't like is the uncertainty of Sheehan's schedule. What if he gets this start for Ohtani and then Ohtani's like, no, I'm good. And he takes the Colorado start. I mean, you can still find another start for Sheehan, and it'll probably be against the Giants. So it'll probably be a good one. But, you know, sometimes when you're running your team in the playoffs, like, uncertainty is just the worst. I mean,
oh, completely.
Like, and a lot of these playoff teams that, like, you run the waivers tonight for tomorrow, you can't just make an immediate pickup, right? Like,
yep.
So if they're like, oh, like today, for example, there are tons of people who won't get Sheehan's start today.
Right.
Because it just came out of nowhere.
This is a great point. So do you take the uncertainty of Rocky Road or Ryan Burgert at Cleveland?
I might just take one foot in front of myself and just be like Burgert, Angels. Burgert, Cleveland. Yeah, I guess at this point because the Angels.
Right, because he's going today, Burgert.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a really
good I like that point. At Cleveland, so.
I'm you've convinced me there. I think the certainty part of it is 100%. Just get
I'm trying to look at my oh, by the way, I just need to throw this in there real quick. I am in first place in my TGFBI league. Woo! And also in the top 10 for the entire thing.
For the overall?
Yes, I am 7th overall. And at the risk of letting people know what I might be looking at, it's actually not too bad of a risk because I'm not pitching isn't what will put me over the top. I'm going to look at the free agents here real quick and filter it for starting pitchers. So this is more of a 15 team. I think the only reason I want to do this is because we've been a little bit more, I think, on the sort of 10 and 12 team. I just want to give your 15 teamers some love.
Absolutely.
I'm seeing some Cade Cavalli at Miami. I think last episode I said you had the stones to this is I want to go on the record here. Because you were trying to put me into something like I was recommending before that.
Yankees. No, it was really hilarious. I had a good time.
Not.
You were absolutely saying, we can roll the tape back if we want.
I was absolutely saying, if you had the stones after the Yankee,
after
this Yankee thing. And I did, in some places, I used Cade Cavalli against Miami, and he was great.
Oh, so, did I. Wonderful.
You get at Miami next week. You could re-rack that. This is going to be more like, I'm going to give you like five names and you pick one.
Sure.
So it's Cade Cavalli at Miami, Luis Severino at home against Boston. Logan Allen might be a two-step.
Well, Logan Allen is getting replaced by Joey Cantillo today. We don't know.
Oh, so maybe Joey Cantillo gets a two-step. If that is true, then Joey Cantillo gets really exciting next week because he gets the Royals at home and the White Sox at home. That might be my favorite out of all of them.
Well, I'm Joey curious Wentz. Where he's at with his pitch count and how stretched out he is, if that's the case. But I don't know because we haven't seen Joey Cantillo start for a while.
He didn't even start in the minors when he went down?
I don't know. I assume so, but I got to check that one. That's the only thing I would be concerned about there.
You and DVR like Joey Wentz more than I do. Joey Wentz, and he has not been good.
What's wrong with you?
He's not been good.
DVR. We got to get DVR on you. What am I doing?
He's catching strays. Joey Wentz has Cubs and Astros maybe at home. And just to finish it off, to give you one more option, This is how bad The Wire is. I'm just scrolling through all sorts of names. There's nobody there. Yoendris Gomez might have a two-step.
So
Rays and I'm with Guardians.
You. I'm with you on that one. Luis Morales, I assume, was picked up in a lot of those leagues.
Yeah, he's pretty much gone. That was last week's big acquisition. I got a bunch of Morales because I didn't have enough money for Tolian Tong, and that's basically what happened. Anybody who didn't have enough money for Tolian Tong got Luis Morales. I thought it was a pretty good backup.
A lot of people had choice Morales, so, you know. But I would say, yeah, I think I'm with you. They're not Luis Severino. Who also only threw about 60 or 61 pitches, I believe. And yesterday in a still ill start. So
his home road splits are amazing. I don't want to touch him at home. I think he's almost tanking it because he wants to be like, can we leave? Or can you trade me? He's like, everybody else can see my home road splits. Some other team will trade for me.
He heard the news of, hey, maybe I will be traded at the deadline.
Yeah,
that'd be great.
And then when he wasn't, he's like, "Nope, going on the IL." Thank you.
A name you didn't mention is, yeah. All right, nope. I refuse the pitcher now.
Yeah,
you didn't mention Martin Perez.
Oh,
who just took down the Yankees?
Did you take him over all the guys I just said?
So if you want to talk about a Boyer, he's been doing it for ages.
That's true.
And Martin Perez is going to get at Detroit and then hosting the Rays and then hosting the Orioles.
That's not a bad three-step.
Right?
But I thought that was somebody I really liked out of that. There was the Joey Cantillo two-step.
Joey Cantillo certainly on my radar. 91 pitches in his last start in the minors. Great call there. He is stretched out.
He's ready to go, yeah.
And we'll see today if he is. He's going to at Boston. And then it would be, as you mentioned, Kansas City and the White Sox as a two-step there.
I hope he gets shellacked by Boston and pick him up.
Well, then they might not leave him in the rotation, though.
Oh, that's right. Dang it. Okay, he needs to go five and give up like three or four.
That's what I thought. Five and three. That's it. You know? The bad fantasy, but the good real baseball.
Yeah.
Now sticking with
Cavalli at Miami is pretty exciting. It's just one start though.
So I assume also a lot of people have Parker Messick, who's also, I don't know if he's worth the hold. Maybe he is, maybe he isn't. He has to go into Tampa Bay next, and then you'd be facing the Royals and then at Detroit and then.
So answer my question though.
What was the question? I said Cantillo,
Cavalli. Okay, so Cantillo. All right.
Yeah, I mean, I do like K Cavalli too. I mean, it's both of those. Cavalli only threw about 23% curveballs yesterday against the Marlins, which is kind of weird.
And he has like a very obvious command issue.
But the thing is, he looks like he's trying to. The curveball was looking great. He's bottom of the zone, 63% strikes, all there. And he's like, yeah, I'm not going to throw. I'm going to throw more fastballs. I'm like, nah.
And those high effort, herky jerky fastballs. I mean, this is what people talk about when they talk about modern pitching in a way.
Herky jerky.
Yeah, all you care about is stuff. All you're trying to do is throw the ball hard. Yeah,
You don't care about that. Why would you care?
Yeah,
about that?
Yeah.
He's got to be able to get out. I always ask people like, what does that mean? Can you please tell me what it means? Are you talking about sequencing specifically? Is that it? Is it he's able to throw the right pitch in the right situation? Well, we actually have that data, and it's not
I did just read, this is a little bit more theoretical, but I did just read a very interesting research piece that's going to go into the next Sabre Journal, baseball research journal that's coming out, that suggested that a catcher's value in game calling is at least equal to and maybe more than his value in framing.
That would not surprise me at all.
And I have to look again at the names. Dang it. I should have that in front of me.
I mean, okay. You got to think of Yadier Molina.
Well, this was more recent. I think Jake Rogers was either really good or really bad. That doesn't help. I remember he was on the list.
just to keep this here for a moment, I do want to highlight some guys who might be coming back and who you would be favoring here. John Means is a potential one for Cleveland, and if he's ready by the 17th, he would be getting Detroit twice, one away and one home. And then you also have Ryan Weathers should be on the horizon for everybody. It's maybe a week or so until Ryan Weathers comes back. To me, He's already at 96 in the minors. I would be jumping on that in Fab wherever possible for this weekend. And on the same note, I wonder if we're going to see Robbie Snelling show up for the Marlins.
It's they've got to. They're running out the other pitchers that are not good when they have a possible good pitcher. I mean, I do not like Valente Velozzo, and I don't see much that I really like about Adam Mazur. That's two guys in the rotation right now. Even if you replace one with Weathers, you still got another one you can replace with Snelling. That's my
stance. No way, Valente Beazo. No way am I touching that guy. But are you stashing Ryan Weathers or even Robbie Snelling?
I have stashed Snelling in a couple places. Yeah, I have. Good. I'm just hoping for it. The AAA numbers for Snelling indicate that the velocity increase has pushed his fastball into a positive territory. It used to kind of, it's like a mediocre shape one, but now mm-hmm. he's increased this, and he's a lefty, which, you know, makes me predisposed to liking him.
Yeah, there you go, right? So we're going to talk about a few more guys. A lot of the players that you are likely considering to pick up right now for your playoffs. We're going to talk about them after this break. We're going to move to Houston for a second.
Oh, by the way, Jake Rogers, really good at framing and really good at calling. But in terms of really good at calling, Freddie Fermin, Tyler Stevenson, and Adley Rutschman.
Well, yeah, we know about Dadley. When he showed up last year.
Really bad at calling. Carson Kelly and Ryan Jeffers.
Huh.
Something to think about.
Whoever was catching for the Astros last night.
What is going on with Mick Abel in Minnesota?
Sorry. You know what I'm referencing, right?
What did you say?
And the other guy who's really bad at pitch calling is the person who was catching Framber Valdez last night.
Hey, yo.
I'm just kidding. Framber, you should not have done that. And that was horrible. And like,
you've never seen anything like that on a baseball field, have you?
I have seen people break their wrists.
But have you ever seen anybody cross up their catcher and throw at the catcher on purpose?
No.
No, I've never seen anything like that.
No. Absolutely bonkers.
What's going on with Mick Abel in Minnesota?
I don't know, man. Maybe is Ryan Jeffers catching?
That could be it. Is he even up right now? Or is he? He is optioned.
I love Mick Abel. I think he's so good. But
they have six guys in the rotation right now. So Bradley's going to drop out for somebody.
I mean, Simi Woods Richardson just went 40% splitters or whatever. And it was fine. But like, okay, that's one start. It's just, look, Mick Abel is the guy. You want him. Why are you not giving him more opportunities right now?
I don't know. And I like Zebby. You know, he's got to be somebody that's on some radars because I think he's being dropped. And he has a bit of an uneven schedule and the results haven't been great, but the models like him. One thing that I noticed about Zebby that annoyed me was, and this is happening right now, so I'm not looking at his scoreboard. Oh, God, should I look at a scoreboard?
I will. Go ahead.
He's, okay. Well, he's facing, I just find this interesting. He's facing the White Sox again.
Yep.
You just faced them.
Yeah.
I would normally circle this and say, this is a great start for him.
Mm.
What is he doing?
Well, okay. So he goes at 7:40 p.m. Eastern time.
Okay, good.
You're so scarred after the Cavalli incident. Yeah.
I think Zebby's schedule is great. It's great other than Yankees at home. So I'd still have Zebby circled as a pickup in every league.
I have a ton of opinions.
Which I'm risking right now because he's
going to go tonight. I mean, look, this is it. This is what I
you're welcome.
This is the Chad Kuhl.
Definitely.
But no, this is, I have a lot of thoughts about Zebby Matthews. I'm going to share them with you after this break.
We just did a break.
Did we just did one? Well, then never mind. Just kidding. Oh, yeah, we did one with Sarah Getty. I have a lot of thoughts about Zebby Matthews. And let me tell you them right now. Zebby obviously has really good stuff with his four-seamer and his cutter and slider. He has yet to get to a place where I watch him and I go, great, he knows what he's doing exactly and executes it to a T. It always feels like it's good, but never enough. right? It's never just give me the ball. I'm going to hurl this past you and or I'm going to make this move and you're going to miss it. It's always like, okay, I'm going to get the ball in the zone, but it's never really spotted exactly as I want it to. You'll have some really good moments, but it's not quite there. And I have a problem of falling for guys like this a lot too early. This is one of the biases I have. And it's burned me a lot of kind of like the cherry bomb of the young guy. And I can see how they could turn to like a Schwellenbach kind of thing or Nolan McLean, right? But a lot of the time, like McAbel, it's just not quite nailed down right. And Emmett Sheehan's had a lot of stumbles along the way too.
I guess what's kind of interesting about Zebby is that everything's pretty much hard. Like he does throw the curve and change, but he throws them a lot less. So if you're comfortable, like, you know, working between 88 and 95, which you should be in today's league, right? Then maybe Zebby's not that uncomfortable of an AB, you know? Mm-hmm, it's kind of like everything's hard. It kind of goes in slightly different directions. If you guess right, it's a homer.
Yeah. That's the kind of thing though, watching Zebby. It's like, he's not overpowering. He's just not.
Even if stuff says he should be.
Right.
Maybe he should just really ramp up the slider and kind of pitch backwards a little bit.
Or maybe just get to another team without Ryan Jeffers. I mean, I'm going to. You just told me that the sequencing's bad. So there you go.
That could be something small like that. But you were digging on Arrighetti. I think the schedule is good, actually. I think the schedule, this is one of those sort of unqualified good, because the worst start on Arrighetti's schedule is at Seattle, is home against Seattle.
Yeah, home against Seattle is not fun. You don't want to be facing the Mariners on the road. But at Texas, my gosh, is that good? Yeah. Not only were you talking about it being in Pitcher's Park, they are hurt right now. That is not a
and the end of season against Anaheim, Mike Trout might not even play that game.
Right. And Arrighetti, I think, actually will be starting in full because the Astros, looking toward the playoffs, they either are going to be fighting for something, making sure that they have a spot that they need.
Yeah, the West looks
or they'll need him. I mean, he's part of that rotation. They want Arrighetti to be that three. So
they're looking for a three because Luis Garcia and Javier have not necessarily proven that they're the three yet.
Right. And so I'm all for that start with Arrighetti. I've circled it. I've made a stream. I've just like get that one. Luis Garcia surprised me with a much better return from the IL than I expected. And
the velo wasn't back though.
The velo was terrible. It was 91 in change. The results is what I was talking about there. He was leaning to the cutter.
He was slow walked him, man.
Yeah, it was under 25% usage of the cutter. That was the only good thing. And back in the day when Garcia was killing it, it was the cutter and the slider together were both getting whiffs and doing well. Just seeing one pitch is not great. And also, as you mentioned, that velocity, but it is at Texas. On Sunday, would you be going for that?
Heartburn, man. That is heartburn. I'm taking Arrighetti over Luis Garcia, for sure.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's, yes. Yes, I think we're on the same page there. But, I mean,
I will start Luis Garcia at Texas in at least two places, three places. You know why? Because I have him in all my drafting holds where all my guys are injured, and he's who I've got. So, I'm not going to pick him off a wire. At 90 miles. Not miles an hour. 91. Right. I don't like that.
I would actually circle Christian Javier for when he does get Texas on the 17th.
Mm-hmm.
It's on in formerly Arlington. I'll just always call it Arlington. I don't care. Christian Javier to me last start started to show actually what we want, which is good spotted four seamers upstairs, and then having enough in the secondary department. With changeups and sliders. So
he's got the fullest arsenal I've ever seen out of him.
Yeah. Sinkers and curves in there too.
Yeah. It's crazy.
Wild. Are we done with Seth Lugo?
It's if he two more starts, baby. Come on, Seth. Give me these two starts.
You got seven in a row of just terrible.
Awful. But he's got Angels at Cleveland and then if he can't do it in these next two starts, then he's gone because at Philly, Toronto, at Sacramento. Well, I mean,
I don't think anyone really has expectation. Like, even if Seth Lugo does fine in the next two, you're just still gonna be terrified.
Yeah, right? That's right. Yeah,
you know, the curveball has still been there, which is so wild to me. The curveball has always been the major thing for Seth Lugo. Even if he changes the shape on it, it's really kind of a sweeper-ish one, and another one that's more of a drop. But he had one game that it was missing out of the last like six or so that's been terrible. But it's the other stuff that's really been failing. Seth Lugo just can't get homers. His everything. I don't want to call it secondaries, but it's just non-curveballs out of
two
the middle.
Two homers a game in six out of his last nine. Well, more than that. Seven out of his last 10 starts.
Unreal. That includes playing at Kauffman.
Yeah.
So are you still starting against the Angels?
You know what's really, I think, left in the most is his command.
Oh, absolutely.
He never was a big stuff plus guy, but location plus has always been above 100, and this year 88. So I would assume actually he's dealing with some injury or something.
I would think so too.
Some unreported injury.
Yeah.
I'm leaving him in for those two starts, though. I don't know. Those are two nice starts. You know, I'll take him. Would you take Lugo or Burgert for those two? They have the same two starts.
I would take Burgert.
Yeah.
You know, I feel like the writing's on the wall kind of with Lugo right now. We have all the warning signs that we've wanted. I would just anxiety free, you know?
Like, I think the thing that I struggle with the most as a manager is that I think that the number one mistake people make is being too reactionary.
Mm.
But then you can become too sedentary.
Right.
In response, where you're like, oh, but no, Seth Lugo's got a really long track record of being pretty good. Like, and these starts are good. Like, I'd rather have Seth Lugo and his 8 million pitches over Ryan Burgert and his two, you know?
Yeah.
But
it's really difficult because also Scott Pianowski has a fantastic quote saying, if you've never made a bad drop, you're doing it wrong.
Yeah.
And that's the thing too. Like, I learned a very valuable lesson. I think it was 2013, my fantasy season, when Jeff Smarzja, whose nickname is Shark, I know, but I call him Loose Lips. Don't worry about it. Because he lost my championship because I stayed with him the entire year in a 134 whip because it was Jeff Smarzja. And I just it's Jeff Smarzja. I got to do this. But he pulled me down massively over 200 innings doing that.
Yeah.
Loose Lips. What's an ineffective Jaws or a shark? It's one with loose lips. Okay. That's what that is. So I think about that a lot of like, if you had Ryan Gausman the entire year last year, or like Jose Brios when he was bad with Chris Bassett, why just all Jays? I don't know. Doesn't matter. This happens a lot. And like Zach Gallen for the first half, Tanner Bibee this year. And now Zach Gallen, by the way, is like four starts good. Are we like completely back on this, you know?
On Rates and Barrels today, we decided that they're going to give him the qualifying offer.
That makes sense. That's why they didn't deal him at the deadline, is what you're saying.
And what we have seen for Gallen is a real recovery of his ability to command the ball. So he's sort of settled in the last, month and a half. As a guy with like a 95 stuff plus and like a 110 location plus, a 10, you know,
mm-hmm.
I mean, that works.
That's
like
that's legit.
Yeah. Also, for what? Why has the stuff plus in his fastball gotten better? He's
no
throwing
idea.
It harder. He's throwing it harder.
Well, that's a good thing.
That's it. He's just throwing it harder. He finally got over 94, and look at that. He's better.
Sometimes that's really simple. I mean, do we think that's going to stick for September? We have him against Texas today at San Francisco, then hosting San Francisco in next three.
He's a pickup. He's out there.
Right,
that's a great
like that.
End of season schedule. The only thing I don't want is Philadelphia on the 21st.
Yeah, you think they're going to let him go on the 27th against the Padres?
I think you could. By the time you get to the 21st, you can drop anybody almost.
Right. No, completely. You should not be held on to the name because a lot of times guys will not go full games. You got to really try and find the ones who are
27th and 28th. Don't believe the schedule on the 27th and 28th right. for anybody.
All right, to take this out, this is going to be the last one here. We're going to go to Baltimore And I got to talk about two sets here. First one is Bradish and Rogers. Okay. Not Jake Rogers. Mm-hmm. We're talking Trevor Rogers. And Trevor Rogers' schedule.
Wow. That's awful. Rogers
at the Blue Jays.
Oh, God. That
the Yankees,
is terrible.
And then at the Yankees. Okay. However, Trevor Rogers has been absurd. You know, he has not been bad.
I did talk to him.
And what did he say?
He said he was collapsing on his front leg in Florida.
Oh, interesting. And
that's where the Lost Velo went.
Huh.
So when he got here, they basically did some stuff where they were doing drills about like sort of just slamming his front foot down. Mm-hmm. But when I was like having him run through other stuff, he was like, it's all the same, except for I added a sweeper. And right. The reason, and I was like, you're a lefty. What do you do with a sweeper? And he said, well, I was facing the Astros the other day and they were just spitting on everything down because they thought anything I threw down was the changeup and that I wouldn't be able to command it. So they'd get balls out of that. And so I threw my sweeper when they were expecting changeups down. And I was able to, because that stayed on plane, I was able to keep that in the strike zone as opposed to dropping down below it.
Right.
And it did get to what I think is a fundamental issue in discussion of pitch tunneling. And I did see at Sabre Seminar an approach that was kind of novel to me, which is when we talk about pitch tunneling, a lot of times we talk about fastball plus. So we're talking about fastball plus something else, right? Mm-hmm. And this person did a study at Sabre Seminar where they just said, does information from the last like five pitches thrown improve my projection for the next pitch thrown? Like just knowing what the last five pitches were,
yeah,
improve it. And the answer was yes. So this is what I'm thinking. And it's what I directly asked Trevor Rogers. So what you're saying is that tunneling between secondaries exists. And he was very adamant that it did.
Oh, that's cool.
And I think he's got to be right because, you know, I talked to a hitting coach about Boston and Boston's like, oh, we're not going to throw any fastballs. And I said, like, aren't you going to do anything about this, hitting coach? And he's like, yes, I told all my guys to sit slider against Boston and half of them listened. So that's the problem with being a coach these days. But
yeah.
So if people are sitting slider, then tunneling between secondaries absolutely exists. And sliders get thrown so much in the league these days that people are probably sitting sliders. So in any case, those two explanations are good explanations. And they were good explanations for me to be like, he can be as good as he was in Miami, plus maybe a little bit with the sweeper. He's not this good.
Right. So you're not starting him against the Dodgers, Jays, Yankees twice. Is that what you're saying?
None of those. I want none of that smoke. And I know he's going to have like a 2.2 ERA through the
four. He's going to kill it because Trevor Rogers is just in.
Taking none of those. I'm taking Tyler Wells and Kyle Bradish over him.
Okay, so hold on. So Kyle Bradish gets Pittsburgh and the White Sox and then the Yankees twice, right?
And then I'm dropping Kyle Bradish.
Okay. So if you had to go Trevor Rogers or Bradish for those two Yankee starts.
Also, did you watch the Kyle Bradish starts, right?
Oh, yeah.
Did every count go to 3-2?
Yeah, right.
I think it's
sort of, in the second one more so. The second one, he really did not have confidence in the Lakers. Yeah.
Is that what it was? I was like, I thought it was maybe pitching backwards because I thought he was like stealing strikes with the breaking ball early, and then he couldn't use the breaking ball also to get whiffs.
Yeah.
He just used it to steal strikes. He was trying to throw fastballs and he can't command the fastballs as well.
67% fastballs. Like what? That should never be your approach, Bradish. Yeah. It was a lower strike rate curveball as well. But I mean,
I think
that
kind of like, it's like smaller than I remember.
Oh, yeah? Don't tell him that. He never said that.
Yes, that would go over real well. That Bradish schedule, Tyler Wells gets the same schedule, but Tyler Wells actually somehow avoids the Yankees.
Well, right. So Tyler Wells, yeah.
And he looked really good in that start against the Padres.
Man can often do this where you get 3-3 and they just kind of stack with each other. Uh-huh. But Wells and Povich, I think, is a very interesting one because you have Tyler Wells who just returned from his post-UCL surgery. It wasn't Tommy John, but might as well, but kind of not, whatever. To make, he started with over 80 pitches and survived and everything. And now he's going to get Pittsburgh, the White Sox, and the Rays away from Tampa Bay. So you got to roll with that. At the same time, you also have Cade Povich doing the same thing. And Cade Povich has really surprised me. Four-seamer command has been incredible. And he's actually doing the whole Blake Snell blueprint with curveballs and changeups down as well. Has a more has a wider arsenal than Wells. And Wells, I got to say, has a negative. Tyler Wells has a negative 0.2 height-adjusted VAA. Negative. And he got four whiffs, though, against the Padres. On that four-seamer at 92.
I think because he was pitching backwards a little bit, he threw that cutter a lot.
Exactly.
And that's not a cutter. It's a slider.
Yeah.
So, yeah. I don't know. Wells is okay. I might take Povich over him. They have the same schedule. I talked to Povich, too, when he came to town. And, you know, people already probably know this. He went to the kick change, and the kick change has been good for him. But one thing that was interesting that I hadn't talked to him about before was just that the cutter that he threw in the minors was really good.
Threw it back. Yeah.
Yeah, but he said when he got to the major leagues, it just got caved. Yeah. He's just got it.
We talked to Povich on the talking pitching. I think.
That's right.
And I remember telling him, I was like, dude, just bring the cutter back. It's like one thing at a time. I'm like, just do it. He still hasn't done it. So hopefully he will soon. But I think, you know, that's going to do it. Unless there's one other guy you really wanted to bring out there, I think that's going to do for this episode of The Craft. Anyone else?
And may all of your teams win unless they're playing mine.
Yeah, that sounds right. That's exactly what I say. unless you're playing Eno. But Eno, what are you working on down the stretch here? What are the things that people should look out for?
I've got a piece coming out on Fridays ranking the postseason starting rotation. So basically the top three in each rotation.
Nice.
We've got a piece coming about IVB. And that one's fun for me because there's a quote in there from Josh Kalk. We got Josh Kalk on the record. Josh Kalk is a genius.
Yeah.
And he was basically the guy who created the Rays pitching development machine and then went to Minnesota and created that one in Minnesota. But he has a really funny quote in there about why he can talk about IVB now. I did a little accompanying video because the Times is doing video for some of its pieces. So
nice.
You can watch that and make fun of me.
No, I've never made fun. We're always just like, oh my gosh, there he is. We're so excited for him.
Come to First Pitch Arizona. I'm booking my tickets this week. And I agreed to, we're going to do a live Rates and Barrels. I'm going to do a presentation about some of the new bat tracking metrics.
Oh, I can't wait for that one. You're going to have Kyle Bland in the first row, guys.
You won't be there. It's about hitters.
No, I will, because this is why I need to be there. Because I don't know anything. I'll be doing a pitching panel with Paul Spohr there. Also hosting on the corner where Eric Smolsky and I will have our rankings on the wall and a mic for you to come on up and yell at us saying, what
Blake Snell should be way higher than 2030. He should be at least
last year, the two I really remember, the three conversations were Spencer Schwellenbach. We were too high on him. And then that was what it was at the thing. We had Garrett Crochet at three when he was like 51st overall in FBC at the time. And then we were too low on Yusei Kikuchi. That was the ones I remember. Now, of course, I'm sure there are many others that we were very wrong about, but those are the ones I remember.
Right about.
Okay.
Definitely. I remember the ones I was right about. I don't remember any of the ones I was wrong about.
Nothing else. Wrong. but the other thing I'm going to be doing is hosting a side panel on how to draft pitchers after 300 and how to identify them and who are the kinds of pitchers that we see routinely not pan out well and how to position yourself entering your seasons effectively. That should be a blast. You guys got to go to First Pitch Arizona. And we're not kidding when we say, like, you can just hang out with us. Like, that's what we want to do. So we'll see you guys there. But until next week, on behalf of Eno Saris, my name is Nick Pollock. We'll talk about the craft of pitching again. next week.